Our speaker today is our very own Mel Tidwell. Melvin Cassidy Tidwell grew up in Lakeland, Florida. His family had a small farm in Lakeland. Mel, while in high school, in his high school years, was a musician. At the age of 18, he joined the Navy and was stationed in Hawaii. While there, he was on submarine duty. Mel spent 10 years with the Navy, ending his career in Jacksonville, Florida. He then was with Lockheed Martin for 25 years. While in Huntsville, Alabama, he ended his career with Lockheed Martin. Recently, he and his husband, John, our pianist, moved to Blue Ridge, where he spends his time gardening, tending his chickens, and his aviary of finches. Ragnar, their dog, also lives there with them. He's known as Rags, and he helps keep the predators away from the small farm. Mel also takes very good care of his husband, John. So he says, is that true? Okay. Anyway, I would like to introduce you to my brother from another mother, Mel Tidwell.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I'm actually a little bit nervous. I've never done this before, so stand with me. We'll have a few laughs, a little bit of fun. But it's been very emotional writing this story, thinking about my parents and my grandparents and the people that have gone before me. It brings back so many memories. But we're going to give it a shot. So, how many of y'all are from the South? Raise your hands. Oh, okay, good. Most of you will get all of my jokes. The rest of you will have to wait and see. Well, in 1976, I was a teenager, and I was the last person you would imagine that would become interested in food. We were the typical Florida redneck family. You know, we had old cars in the yard with grass growing up to the windows and half-naked youngins running around the yard chasing the mosquito truck down the road. After all, I am the first generation in my family to have all our own teeth. Anyway, I was a boy that was so finicky, he wouldn't eat macaroni and cheese. If there was an onion in the room, I ran. But the hard work of my parents and my grandparents was planting the seed inside of me, and I didn't even know it. Okay, at that time, they could tell you where every bite of our food came from. We grew potatoes, and I hated having to go and get potatoes from the potato house. If you have any kind of vegetable sitting in a shack out back, you're going to have rodents. Well, in the 60s and 70s Florida marsh that I grew up in, if you had rodents, you're going to have snakes. Venomous snakes, rattlesnakes, moccasins, etc. And oh man, I just hated having to go get potatoes from that potato house when I was a boy. Anyway, we grew beans, okra, corn, and greens, among many other things. We picked peas at a local farm by the bushel, and we picked strawberries in Plant City by the quarts. We raised cows and pigs for our meat, and the chicken coop was in my grandparents' backyard for the eggs and chickens for frying. We would travel to Alabama twice a year to visit relatives, and we would always stop at a local smokehouse to get slabs of bacon that my daddy loved. And my mother and granny canned or froze all summer. Certain things were frozen, some were canned, and I didn't really know why. But this would last us all summer, and into the winter and begin again the following spring. Many of these years I was a small, unaware little boy, but then I became a teenager and it was pretty embarrassing. All of my friends shopped at the grocery store and went out to eat pizza, but we just couldn't afford that. But I do remember the first meal I ever cooked, and it was oven barbecue chicken. See, I'm the baby of our family, and all of my older siblings had flown the coop. So my mother went to work outside of our home for the first time ever. And one morning out of the blue, she told me I had to have supper ready for her and Daddy when they came home. I was 14, and I think maybe I'd stirred a pot a couple times and maybe scrambled an egg. So how in the world was I going to cook supper? Well, Granny, of course. We lived on the same property, and she was 50 yards away, and I spent the day running back and forth, asking a million questions. But I made that chicken, and it was good. It wasn't delicious, because back then, we cooked everything to death. You know, well-done steaks, overcooked chicken, anything cooked in a pressure pot, mushy green beans. Remember the fake teeth, right? You had to have everything mushy. But then one of my teen jobs was at a fancy supper club in Lakeland, Florida called the Foxfire Inn. And it was fancy. Even in 1979, it cost $50 for dinner. I worked as a busboy 5 nights a week, and on the weekends, I would bus tables until the dining rooms closed, and then I'd go work in the bar back supporting the cocktail waitresses and the bartenders, and I would make over $100 a night. That was a lot of money for a boy in 1978 and 79. But this is where I acquired my first food memory. It was Cherry's Jubilee. The servers made it right at your table. And my favorite waitress, Miss Brenda, she was the best at doing this. She was a performer. She would take a scoop of those cherries and starting low to high, she would drizzle it into the pan. She would put that pan on a burner right there on the cart. Can you imagine nowadays an open flame on a cart being pushed around a dining room with a linen tablecloth? Yeah, that would be a fire hazard, right? But then came the brandy. She would generously pour it all over the cherries, and whoosh, she would out come with a fancy cigarette lighter and set the booze to flame. That dessert was a dream delight, but I think her showmanship is what really captured me. But, oh crap. I joined the Navy, and I didn't even know foods like that existed. What in the world was cream-chipped beef? Not to mention pancit, meatloaf with whole hot dogs in it. Okay, I'll jump ahead a little bit here, but in the latter part of my naval career, my mom and dad joined me on a family day cruise on one of my ships, and they served meatloaf. Well, my dad's piece of meatloaf had a slice of a hard-boiled egg in it, and he wondered what in the world had we been eating. You know, they still knew that picky little boy, so every other month or so, they would send me care packages whenever I was deployed overseas. It would contain cans of tuna and chicken and granola bars and home-baked cookies from my Granny Hallman. They still thought that I was that picky little boy. But anyway, going back on point, I'd never had real lasagna before I joined the Navy. My mother once spent an entire day making a pan of this food from the Italian gods of big bellies, sustenance, and frying garlic. She was so proud of herself, as she was walking across the kitchen to put it into a wall oven that was too tall for her stature. And plop. She slipped and fell with the pan, and it splattered across the entire kitchen floor. She began to squall as I had never seen my mother do. Her sobbing and crying continued until my father arrived to see her in the kitchen floor, surrounded by what looked like the remnants of a slasher film. But he immediately came to her rescue by driving to the nearest store, which was 5 miles away. It was the Gibsonia supermarket. And he bought cans of Chef Boyardee lasagna. Right? Needless to say, we all had the runs for 3 days. But that was the first time I remember thinking someone had put so much love and effort into feeding the people that they love. She had worked so hard to go outside her comfort zone to make something special. And I was silly and still didn't truly understand what love and devotion my parents and grandparents were putting into producing our bounty. So, as I began to travel through different places in the Navy, I was forced to at least try new things, and especially upon my arrival in Hawaii. OMG, y'all. Now I was into an entirely different culture. I remember my first bite of huli huli chicken. Back then, there were guys standing on the side of the road with charcoal grills cooking and selling this sweet and savory blend of chicken nirvana. Then the Korean food, the kalbi beef with 2 scoops of macaroni salad, the Chinese steamed buns, the sushi, the sashimi, the scrambled eggs with Portuguese sausage and rice we show you for breakfast. I was now about 20 years old and hooked, but still hadn't experienced the love you receive by pouring your time and soul into creating a food experience for the ones you love. That happened for me in a 2-step process. I was living with some friends in an apartment in Waikiki Beach. We were all hungover, but as sailors back then do, we made a jug of tequila sunrise and headed for the beach. After hours of baking in the sun, we returned to the apartment famished, but with very little money. So I went into the kitchen, and I believe I grabbed everything in the fridge, freezer, and pantry. And out came this delicious chicken casserole. Of course, it was made with cream or mushroom soup, because I'm Southern, right? It was well received by the starving guys that were already lit from the booze and probably would have eaten Ellie Mae Clampett's biscuits by that point. But, however, the next time I visited my family back in Florida, I made this same thing. Then I knew I could make people happy by giving them a little of my time and a few ingredients. They still love it when I make this casserole, and I occasionally pull it out during a family gathering to feed the masses, and they still love it to this day. Though I still hadn't found my absolute passion for feeding people, I continued to explore the cuisines of the countries I visited. The kabsa and rice in Saudi Arabia, the lumpia and adobo in the Philippines, the beetroot on a burger in Australia. Yeah. I was in a small town in Western Australia called Geraldton in 1984. And it was a tiny, tiny town. And that would be an understatement. But anyway, I was in a local little shop and decided to stay safe by ordering a burger. Can't go wrong with a burger anywhere in the world, right? Classic American. Well, I took that first bite and I spit it out right onto the plate. Who in the bleepity bleep puts a slice of red beet on a burger? Well, come to find out, the flippin' Aussies do. Well, the passion I later realized was the result of a trip to the San Diego Zoo many years later with my sister, the one true love I've had since birth. She was in her 40s and still would not eat potato salad or anything mixed with mayonnaise. However, that day at the zoo, it was the only side item available at the little sandwich stop. We decided to grab a quick lunch, and we were very hungry. So, much to her amazement, she loved that potato salad. It wasn't the traditional Southern style with mustard. It was made with red potatoes and a mix of fresh herbs. And I decided that I could recreate this at home for my sister. She and the entire family were impressed. They had never had any other potato salad except the one with the mustard, the pickle relish, and the required boiled egg. To this day, I still call it my sister's potato salad, and she makes it for herself now. But this gave me my aha moment. I began collecting food memories from all over the world, like going out for a night of flamenco dancing and eating langoustine and tapas with wine on the coast of Spain. I've had the best shawarma in Egypt along the Red Sea. I've eaten sea slugs in Hong Kong and rooster balls in Taiwan at a lavish Chinese wedding. My friend's wife in Turkey would cook me karnyedik every time I would return to that country because I love it so much. But then I found my food heaven in a tiny Laksa kitchen, no bigger than half the size of the one in the church. And it was in Sydney, Australia, inside of a local pub / theater. My coworkers and I would slip down at least once and hopefully twice a week to enjoy this Malaysian ambrosia. The person taking our order standing at the kitchen, they didn't speak great English. He or she, because we were never really sure, would take our order. And my coworker Kevin always wanted the bean curd laksa, but being the wanker Kevin was, always ordered a bean turd laksa. And the person would look at him like he had lost his mind. Kevin is a wanker. However, I love laksa. This is my favorite thing I've eaten anywhere on the planet. Well, I spent a lot of time in Sydney. I spent about 7 to 8 months out of the year for 4 years in a row working on a contract for Lockheed Martin. And I learned a big lesson about food love being a give and take experience there. When we had completed our multi-year contract, our Australian shipyard manager, Chris Anderson, invited me and my coworker Kevin home for dinner. And I always felt it was a blessing to be invited to someone's table. I stopped and bought wine and flowers for Chris's wife because I'm old-fashioned and Southern. I don't show up empty-handed to anybody's house. But we arrived on time for cocktail hour. Of course, I'm not going to miss cocktail hour. But as we were relaxing and chatting about life, he informed us that his mom had slaughtered a spring lamb on the ranch that very morning and had brought a roast into the city for our dinner. I did not eat lamb. I didn't like the gamey taste. It wasn't something that I'd eaten as a boy. But I know the feeling of inviting someone to dinner and it not being well received. You spend so much time and energy planning and buying and preparing the meal. It comes from a love of wanting to gather with great people and share a common experience from time immemorial. So to see someone not enjoying your labor is heart-wrenching. So, over the next hour, I was trying to maintain my composure and determine how I would get out of eating this lamb. Well, ha, that lamb roast was delicious. Not only did I get to experience the feeling of comfort in their home and see the delight his wife had knowing we loved the meal, but I also learned that I love Australian lamb. I still don't eat American lamb. They let it grow a few months older in the States, and I just really don't like that gamey taste. But luckily, Costco only sells Australian lamb, so I survived. Well, all of these foods have a place in my heart, and I still remember the families in Turkey taking me up to the mountains to their little summer cabin. We grilled over a wood fire, and the hostess had brought her homemade baklava.
Oh boy.
She came walking out of this tiny cabin with a pan about 30 inches in diameter, the love just radiating from her eyes as she looked at me. After all, I was the reason we were there. I was the guest. All of us just swooned over the crisp, tender layers of honey and pistachio, licking our lips in amazement that she had created this wonder in her kitchen that very morning. This woman didn't speak a word of English, but that really didn't matter. We saw in each other that spark of knowing, the love of food, and the proud feeling of carrying on family traditions of food, many of which are disappearing in our world today. Well, I have brought many of these treats back home to enjoy with my family and friends. I usually eat something in a place that I cannot live without. So I return home and learn to create it as best I can remember. I have put so many food branches on my family tree through my travels, but it has all brought me here to my new heaven, the place I share with my one true love, John. But when I return to my family in Florida, the first question they always ask is, what night is Uncle Mel cooking? You see, my family doesn't cook for me anymore. My mother hasn't graced me with her cooking in over 15 years. But we still sit and talk about the foods from our childhood. She made potato gravy or tomato gravy with biscuits when we didn't have enough meat to eat. And then, oh, those fresh lady peas, they were so tender and flavorful. We would speak of my Granny Hallman and how she always had a sweet baked good on her table. My Granddaddy Melvin, where I get my name, wanted something sweet after every meal, and she took care of Granddaddy. Well, now, I don't believe in regrets in life. However, regrets in food? Oh, heck yes. I regret that I never learned how to make my Aunt Irene's biscuits or my Granny Tidwell's collard greens. They put their foot in those things, y'all. They were delicious. With that being said, here's a few food quotes that I adore. Francis Moore Lapp says, "The act of putting into your mouth what the earth has grown is perhaps your most direct interaction with the earth." Elsa Schiaparelli says, "Eating is not merely a material pleasure. Eating well gives a spectacular joy to life and contributes immensely to goodwill and happy companionship. It is of great importance to our morale. And that old Southern humorist, Louis Grizzard, said, "It's difficult to think anything but pleasant thoughts while eating a homegrown tomato." So, in even simpler terms, community is built upon conversations. People like to eat and they like to talk about it. Ask a stranger anywhere in the world what or where he likes to eat, and chances are he'll open up. You do it, we all do it. We love to chat about where we ate and how good, hopefully, or bad it was. But it's more than the food. The atmosphere, the friendly waitress, it's about that bind every human has to the other. Food and love. We all experience it, right? So, that's my story. If you have ever talked to me for more than 2 minutes, I bet we've spoken about food. It really never leaves my thoughts. Early on, when John and I first met, he would ask me what I was thinking. Now that he knows me, he's figured out it's a silly question. Let's see. I'm thinking about what's for dinner. What groceries do we need? A buttery scone I ate in London, or that gelato I devoured at the Bellagio Hotel in Las Vegas? Because it just really never fully goes away, and I love it. But now I spend most days growing what I can, when I can, like my daddy and granddaddy. Then canning, pickling, and freezing just like my mother and grandmother before me. I often tell people that I can channel the old Southern lady inside me. I grow lots of flowers for the table or your bedside nightstand if you stay over in the guest room. I cook mustard greens with bacon grease and hog jowl. And I still occasionally get the chance to show my love of food and my love through food to my family and friends. I'd love to get the opportunity to show each one of you. Thanks.
Thank you,
Mal. Thank you, sir.
Whoa. Brings back lots of memories of relatives and grandmas and bubbies and... Whoa. Does anybody have any questions for Mal? What's for dinner? That's fine.
And I have never learned how to make it. I can't believe it.
I never heard of it. Is okay, so being Italian,
yes,
and depending on where you're from, I grew up, we called it sauce. Yeah. When I moved to like the New York metropolitan area, this gal that I worked for, she kept saying, "Oh yeah, we eat gravy on Sunday." Yeah. And I finally said to her, what the hell do you do with gravy that you eat gravy on Sunday? And she's like, "We put it on pasta." I said, "Oh, I've never had gravy on pasta." And she looked at me and she said, "What kind of an Italian are you?" And then she explained that it was tomato sauce.
Well, tomato gravy in the Southern tradition is you usually have bacon for breakfast, and then you take the grease from the bacon and you throw some of those tomatoes you canned over the summer into the bacon grease, and you just really cook it until it has the consistency of gravy. Yep. Yeah, that's exactly right. You serve it over a hot buttermilk biscuit, and that was dinner. Fried potatoes. Yes. Yeah.
My family are crazy. My family's crazy about gravy, too. When you said that, I thought that was our family recipe. I guess it's a Southern recipe.
Laksa. L-A-K-S-A. Laksa.
What's the seasoning that it was sitting in?
It's a curry. It's made from a very sweet, spicy curry paste that also has coconut milk. Broth, if you're making seafood laksa, you can make seafood broth or chicken broth, and it's kind of whatever vegetables you have.
You're going to give us the recipe?
No. Now he's going to make it for us.
Okay.
He's going to make lots of, he's going to make lots of it. Lots.
Okay.
Yes.
I just have to share, being a Yankee, I did not discover Southern until we kind of drifted south, and I discovered low country. I discovered shrimp and grits. I fell in love with shrimp and grits. Never had it the same way twice, but always good.
Ooh.
And low country boy, and
Casey.
Yes.
Can you go back to the first picture that I had up there?
The very first one?
Yeah, the very first one. There. That's my shrimp and grits. That's what that is. That's a picture of I had a family gathering in my cabin a couple of years ago, and I made shrimp and grits for my guests, and that's what that is.
Next Sunday.
Looks like heaven.
Wow. Now how it, I have a problem with okra still.
Okay.
But I love gumbo.
Okay.
So how do you figure, what is, tell me about your
okay,
okra.
Well, okra is, there is nothing more southern than okra, right? And I grow my own, I grow green and I grow purple. But the problem most people have is the slime, right? And that's because of the way it's prepared, okay? The sliminess in okra actually comes from the seeds inside. When they burst, they turn slimy. So I cook okra two different ways. Number one is this way here, where I just toss it with some olive oil, salt and pepper, and throw it on a flaming hot grill. And you cook it for about 5-7 minutes, just so the outside gets tender. You don't want the inside seeds to burst, and then there's no sliminess. It's just pure, clean okra flavor. If you like that taste, I recommend you try it that way. Or I fry it as my mother did. But no cornmeal, no breading. You just throw that okra in hot oil and cook the slime out of it. And you just keep cooking it. It'll turn black and crispy. All the slime is gone, but it's delicious. And that's the way I grew up eating okra.
Okay.
This is the first year I ever grew okra. This picture is inspired to try to cook it.
Oh, shoot. Wonderful.
Good. Yes.
Carl?
This is a multi-part statement. The observations brought by members of our congregation are so wonderful, and as the parents recruit people, I encourage anybody, don't be afraid to get up there and speak about your unique personal history and story.
Right.
And I think Patrick is going to have to do that because he's such a good service leader.
and you
I
make
want
it.
To share two of my own food memories. As soon as somebody talks about a food memory, their grandparents, I immediately remember Friday night dinner at my grandmother's house, my buddy, and her chicken soup. And I think that's where I learned to overeat. I'm overweight. And then you brought up gravy. I had a two-family house, and at some point we had a tenant who was from a nearby town, a family of three bratty little kids, and she would cook her gravy on Sunday. And I don't know, gravy versus sauce, so same thing. Okay.
Well, actually, they're not. Southern gravy has some kind of thickener, flour, cornstarch, something. Sauce is just a flavorful reduction.
But Italians, sauce and gravy.
Yes, yes, you're right. Yeah, you are right. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I don't know when the book's coming out.
You know, we can work on that. Well, that could be something that we can do over time. Gather recipes, yes, and at some point publish one. A church that Arthur and I belong to in Marietta, I'll bring it in and show it to you. That's doable. That's definitely doable. So
my family asks me that every year. I get phone calls. I get text messages. constantly. I'm in the kitchen. I have chicken. What am I supposed to do, right? Well, I don't use recipes, really. I mean, I research. I look at things. But I just do it, right? It's kind of intuitive. You learn there's basically six techniques of cooking, you know, boiling, braising, roasting, frying, broiling, whatever. You learn those techniques, and then it's just what tastes good to you. Do you like okra? Or do you like laksa? Right?
Or laksa.
You know those things? Cooking is just a breeze.
Wow. Yeah. I just need to say, I come from a family of, my dad was a big hunter and a fisherman, but he would not, and we lived in Panama City, Florida on the Gulf Coast. He would never, ever put his tackle, he said, in that salt water and ruin it. So we had game, or we had fish, and we had vegetables. Mm-hmm. And in the summertime, because it was hot, of course, everything was fried in the South. And we would have cornbread all winter long that was done in the oven. We had fried cornbread in the summer because Mama didn't have to cut the oven on and heat up the house any hotter than it was. So we ate fish and game and vegetables all year round, and fried chicken, of course.
Yes.
Short thing. I hate okra. I make a pot of vegetable soup. David hasn't seen it. It's about this big. I mean, I put every vegetable in the world in there. And I take okra and I grind it up till you can't even tell what it is. Because the flavor in okra in a soup, in a vegetable soup, it doesn't even taste like it's a ripe soup if it doesn't have okra in it.
Interesting. Interesting.
I guess if you don't like the flavor.
Yeah. I like the flavor.
Well, you just got to cook the slime out of it.
I do it.
Yes?
Just one small family story. My mother was home ec major, and I had three siblings. We had duties in the kitchen, but we weren't allowed to cook. Mother cooked. You could sous chef a little here and there if she directed you. But we all watched. And one of her signature dishes that we would take the picnics and stuff was Betty's potato salad. So as we all left home and had our own households, we would call Mom up and ask her how to make her potato salad because we loved it so much. It was after she passed away that we realized that she skipped one ingredient for each of us. A different ingredient for each of us. So we could never quite make it the way Mom made it.
Geraldine?
Coming back home.
Geraldine?
Yes?
You brought back a memory for me. I haven't heard the word squalling since I was a There's always a squalling baby.
That's just another Southern thing, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks everybody for listening to me. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Mel. We all have different beliefs, and I believe that there's something greater and after. And I think what keeps me going with family and food is that I hope that one day before I'm gone at this point, and there's somebody greater up there that says, "What's your last wish?" And I've thought about this for years, and my last wish would be to sit with my grandmother and have her chicken soup or her meatloaf, or just, that would be just the greatest thing. Thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you very much, Mel. That was wonderful.